latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Tickets to the Belmont Stakes Racing Festival are on sale now. New York's premier three-day racing festival returns to historic Belmont Park June 6th through 8th. Buy tickets today and enjoy trackside reserve seats or enhance your experience with one of our premium hospitality packages to make this an unforgettable event. Grandstand admission starts at $15 and three-day festival passes are also available. Buy now at Ticketmaster.com or visit BelmontStakes.com. The Belmont Stakes, where champions are crowned.
Amazing achievements for Pennsylvania breeds on the world stage. Thanks to Finest City, Unique Bella, and Shamrock Rose, PA joins Kentucky as the only state in the past decade to breed Eclipse Award champions three straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our racehorse development fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 388-4643.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
I can't stop shaking. The room has a groove and the floor is almost earthquaking. Look what we're making. History out on the floor and it's just awaking. So get that needle in the core. Scratch that.
We're back at the races after a mirthful Andy Serling visit. And right now we go to Chicago. And I love these stories. You know, I love these conversations when a young horseman strikes out on their own and finds success. Sometimes it takes a long time. Sometimes it happens, you know, fairly quickly. When it comes to Brett Santangelo, it's come pretty quickly. And the graded stake win on Saturday in the Hanshin Cup with Lanier, a $40,000 claim back in November. And he's been competitive. It basically has improved slightly. And it was enough on Saturday to get Brett a graded stake win. Congratulations.
Thanks a lot, man. I appreciate you having me on here. And it was a really, really awesome day.
Before we get to this specific horse and, you know, picking him out and the owners and everything that went in, give us a bit of the backstory to you and, you know, to your getting on the racetrack.
Sure, sure. I'm from Central Pennsylvania originally, Penn National to be exact. I grew up in Hershey, Pennsylvania, which is about 15 minutes from Penn National Racecourse. My family is not in the game. I just kind of fell in love with the gambling side of things and seeing these horses run at Penn National. And I had a family friend who was a veterinarian out there as well. So through high school, I kind of helped her out and had a couple jobs on the track and helped helped her at her veterinary practice and got caught the bug. And I went to Lexington after I graduated from high school, went to University of Kentucky, immersed myself more into the game as much as I could, worked some sales, worked for different trainers, had the opportunity to go out to Southern California and work for Jerry Hollendorfer, which I did two separate occasions during the summer in between fall and spring courses. I worked with some incredible horses. I give Jerry and his team a lot of credit and for a lot of the things that I learned. And I came back to Kentucky after working for Jerry, had a couple horses of my own, made Lexington my home base for the last 3 years, shipped around mostly, had horses at a couple different places in Lexington. And now I've got 20 head up here at Prescott Downs back in Pennsylvania where it all started. And we're looking forward to having a really good meet at Prescott Downs and shipping horses at, you know, other places they need to win at.
Oh, that's tremendous. And, you mentioned Press getting started for the season, and you look at Lanier and how, you know, he wins this Hanshin on Saturday. Talk about picking him out. Talk about, how you put together an ownership roster.
Sure. So I saw this horse. He was in for 40 at Churchill, and Tommy Todd, who is Oakview Stable, he was looking for a couple horses at the time, and I've got to give him a ton of credit for giving me a shot. Got 7 or 8 horses for him and his father right now, so they're an integral part of my operation. But he was looking for some horses at the time, and we were kind of gearing towards Turfway. I spent my winter at Turfway, so we tried to claim some synthetic and grass horses. This horse had run twice on the Poly last year. Ran second to an extremely nice horse of Larry Ravelli's, which you guys saw win for fun on Saturday. On Friday at Arlington, horse named Well Labeled. He beat him in the forego. And then he also ran second to a very nice horse of Kellen Gorder's named Royal Sun in the Prairie Bayou last year. So he was beat by two top-class racehorses last year in both of the stakes at Turfway Park. And he was a 6-year-old at the time when we claimed him, but we thought, we'd be able to do some damage with him at Turfway, heading into that meet. So Tommy put his money where his mouth was, and we dropped the slip on him. We were the only one in for him that day. He won the allowance prep at Turfway sprinting. I ran him back in the stake at Turfway as well. Got beat by another darn good horse of Cipriano Contreras, his name nonetheless, who beat up on us twice, actually, at Turfway Park. And luckily, we were fortunate enough to turn the tables on him at Arlington this past Saturday. So the claim was, mostly generated around the fact that he had some polyform, and I knew I was going from Turfway to Presque Isle, so I thought that, a horse with his class on the poly track would suit me well for Turfway and Presque Isle, and so far, knock on wood, it's worked. So we're going to keep doing what we're doing.
Well, and it feels like he's a horse, even though he's 7. He's an older gelding. He's by Lewis Michael, and it feels like he's only just fulfilling his promise of late. It's quite something. I mean, he started running 80s buyers last year and for Troy Newton, and now he's had a couple of 90-ish buyers, including on Saturday, and it's really a nice story. Declan Cannon rode him both in the Kentucky Cup, and actually he had ridden him for Troy Newton as well. Is he a tough horse to ride?
Tough's not the right word. He's like you said, he's 7. He's been around the block. He's run 30 some odd times. He knows where the wire is. He knows what he's doing. He's a feel good type of horse. I would not say he's tough. He's not very difficult. But Declan has done an exceptional job with him, with both these past two starts. He's a strong horse that likes putting himself in the race. So you just kind of have to have someone on his back that's patient and doesn't make too early of a move, because this horse, Steve, he's not doesn't have a big turn of foot. You know, Declan said this, and I'll take the words from his mouth, but Declan said this perfectly. He doesn't quicken, he lengthens. So, you know, he doesn't have a big turn of foot, but he will give you, you know, he'll give you everything he's got every time you run, every time he runs. So having Declan on his, you know, having Declan or someone on his back that knows, you know, that knows the horses obviously puts us at an advantage. And I think Declan's done a great job. So we're going to keep that the way it is. You know, don't change something that isn't broken. But Declan knows him really well, and the horse seems to really respond to Declan. So it's a good fit.
Well, and really, 32 starts as a 7-year-old, he doesn't have all that much, you know, all that much mileage on the odometer. It's unbelievable. What a nice claim. And to claim a 6-year-old at the end of their 6-year-old year, to claim a horse for 40 like that, that's a little bit of a daring maneuver.
All credit goes to Tommy in that sense. You know, I found the horse, but Tommy put the money up. We're obviously being rewarded for the risk that we took. But to your point, I mean, claiming a 6-year-old going into winter, into their 7-year-old year, it took some stones, and he did it. And this horse is just, he's special, and he's really, really cool to be around. And horses like this make trainers like me, you know, look pretty good. So I'm really, really happy for the horse, for the owners, for my team, for myself, for everyone that's involved. So it's an awesome achievement, and we only look to keep doing bigger and better things with him.
Well, and you know, you've got a real, you know, up from the bootstraps kind of a story going, and to get a horse like this, and he was your first, you know, first stake placements, and now graded stake win. I mean, it's the kind of horse that you end up needing to find a pasture for him so
that
you can keep him around.
Absolutely. Yeah, I rubbed the horse myself, and he's, you know, you could probably say this, a lot of, you know, everyone could say this about, you know, the best horses they've been around, you know, they're really cool. But this horse is just, he's like a puppy. You know, he's just an absolute pet. You know, he loves candy, loves treats, loves everyone around him. I mean, he's cool to work around. He's just total class. I mean, from his head to his toe, he just, you know, exudes class. And he's awesome to watch train. He's incredible to be around at the races. You know, he walks over with his head down and just quiet as can be, and just, he's a racehorse, man. He knows when to turn it on and knows when to turn it off, and he takes really, really good care of himself, which is another huge part, you know, of the success that he's had. But what an awesome horse! Couldn't pick a better guy to win my first stake with being Tommy Todd. I mean, he's not only a great owner, but he's a great friend of mine. Him and his father, and I'm still on cloud nine. So you know how it is. The game's got high and lows, and I'm gonna keep living this high for as long as I can.
Well, and in addition, I don't want to limit, we don't want to limit the sphere of influence and you know, the kinds of friends that you've got that are rooting for you, because Corey Prewitt deserves a nod here too. He's Declan's agent, and you guys have been friends, and he thinks that you've got a big career in front of you.
You know, Corey's more than a friend. He's like a brother to me. He's great agent, just picked up Corey Lannery, so he's got two really, really capable and strong riders in Kentucky, which he's, you know, more than deserving of having. He, you know, he works hard, he knows the game, he's friends with everybody, you know, everybody loves Corey. I'm honored to call him one of my best friends, and it makes it even more fun winning with friends, as you know. So, you know, from top to bottom, the story's awesome. The experience was awesome. Arlington Park was breathtaking. I mean, every bit of it, the people there, the racing office, you know, everyone there took great care of me and everyone else that shipped in for the stake. And what an awesome place. And to do what we did with, you know, the people who we did it with made it even more special, you know, winning with, like you said, friends like Corey and friends like Declan and owners like Tommy. It makes it all worth waking up early every morning and working hard every day. So it's really, really cool.
Well, there's plenty of, you know, plenty of frustrations and down moments. So that enjoying the ones you know, like this, that you got to cherish him. This is for Declan. It's his fourth graded stake win. He rode for Nacho Correas on Donna Bruja, and for Jack Sisterson on Oxy Lady. So for him, it's his third graded stake horse and fourth win overall. A very very capable young rider. We do some promotion typically a little bit later in the summer for Presque Isle. And, you know, it's an underrated signal for players with nice, steady field size and with that, you know, that 5:30 afternoon first post.
Yes.
It fits in beautifully right between California and the East Coast.
Absolutely.
Talk a little bit about Presque and what you got in the pipeline for this year.
Sure. So I got 20 head up here. Got a little bit of everything. I've got some conditioned $5,000 horses. Have some maidens that I think a little highly of. I've got some two-year-olds. I've got, you know, Lanier, the big horse. Got a couple older horses that have been around the block for a little while. So I've kind of got a good mix of all types of horses. I've got 8 or 9 different clients right now who have all, you know, all great people that have given me, you know, plenty of opportunities. So I'm hoping and thinking, you know, that I'll have a pretty successful meetup here. I shipped up here probably 10 or 12 times last year with horses, and had a strong percentage from the ones I shipped up here. I got tired of being on the road, and so I moved the stable up here. I got a lot of poly horses. I got some stuff that I think we'll really take to this poly. Bought a couple horses privately this early spring and late winter that I thought would suit well up here. So I'm looking forward to being here. It's a really nice place. Erie's a really neat town. Alan Plever's done a great job putting together the book. Alan's the racing secretary up here. There's some great people in the office, and a very, very underrated jockey colony. I mean, there's some great riders here. Willie Martinez, Antonio Gallardo, Pablo Morales. I mean, that's just to name a couple off the top of my head. But a really neat meet, and it's a long meet too. You know, it's 6 months, so it's nice to set up shop and stay in one location for a little while. So I'm really looking forward to this spring and summer.
Brett Santangelo is with us, and we're talking about Lanier winning the Hanshin, kind of morphed into a little bit of a summer season discussion. He's at Presque Isle. You got to give a few calls to a couple of favorites. You mentioned Slick Willie. Willie Martinez, one of my absolute favorites. Put him on the engine. And, Doug Salvatore, you got to give Doug a couple of mounts for his two jocks.
Good dude, too, huh? Some great agents up here. Doug Davis, Doug Salvatore, Mike Moran. I mean, just to name a couple again, just off the top of my head, but some really, really good people, good riders, good trainers, good horses around here. So I'm hoping to make a little bit of a splash and see where the summer takes me.
I want you to tell people too, because obviously you much like Bobby Frankel, you came out of the stands and out of the OTV to train. And when you say you picked out some horses and bought some privately and probably some claims regarding synthetic surface, what do you look for? How much of it is pedigree? How much of it is turf form if it's a horse that hasn't tried synthetics? Talk about the anatomy for you of what goes into picking out a horse that you think will excel on a synthetic surface.
Sure. So I think one of the keys to Presque Isle Downs is having conditions, you know, not just Presque Isle, anywhere, but here specifically. I think the non-2s, non-3s, and they write a non-4 on the bottom here too, which is an awesome, awesome race. But buying and claiming horses with lifetime conditions, you can do some damage up here. So, like you said, yeah, I mean, the 3 or 4 horses that I bought this winter either had previous synthetic form or had current turf form. So I do believe that some, not all, but most turf horses will take to this stuff. Not all, though. So you take a little bit of there's a little bit of a risk when buying, you know, strictly a turf horse. But for the most part, a lot of these turf horses like the synthetic. And I bought another horse or two this summer that had run well. I'm sorry, this spring that had run well on the poly before as well. And, you know, horses that like the poly. So that was kind of my way of thinking going into a couple of these claims and purchases. But lifetime conditions are killer up here. You know, you can make a good little bit of money with horses with lifetime conditions. They write, you know, bottom races and 12.5 non-2s, non-3s, 25 non-2s and non-3s. So you can do some damage with a horse that takes to the surface and has some conditions. So that's kind of what I went for with a couple of these horses that I've purchased. And back to Lanier, you know, the horse had some extreme polyform last year, and that's exactly why we claimed the horse, you know, moving forward to keep him on the poly. So, you know, he's another good one to have up here too. So I look for conditions for synthetic and or turf form, and I cross my fingers and hope they like this stuff. So far it's worked, so I'm going to keep doing it.
I love it. And you also are in a unique position being in Erie. It lets you poach. You can ship if you've got a horse that turns out they want the dirt. You can go to Finger Lakes, and certainly the Finger Lakes program this year, you know, better than it's been in years.
Absolutely,
including some terrific purse boost from the maidens on down. You can go to Ohio. I mean, you've got options. On the upper end, you got Woodbine and Arlington, you know, are not difficult ships at all. So absolutely, you're really in a good position set up at Prescott.
I mean, within, you know, 6 hours is no, you know, that's a pretty good hop, skip, and a jump. But within 6 hours, I mean, I've got everything from Thistle Downs to Mountaineer, Finger Lakes, like you said, Arlington. Woodbine is actually only 4 hours from here, and the longest part of the trip is sitting at the border and waiting to get through,
sure,
the gates. So you know, those are four or five, you know, good tracks that you could get to in a very short amount of time, and it's a pretty centrally located place. The weather here is exceptional. I mean, right now it's 45 to 55 in the mornings and 65, 70 in the afternoon. So it's extremely moderate temps, and the horses seem really, really, really happy up here. And when horses are happy, Brett's happy. So I'm in a good spot. I'm pretty happy right now.
Well, you should be happy. Your first graded stake win, and Lanier looks like there's plenty more for this 7-year-old to give. Brett, an absolute pleasure. First conversation together here on the show, and I hope there's many more. Continued success, Presque Isle, and anywhere you go.
Thanks a lot, Steve. I really appreciate you having me on here, and likewise, I hope we have this conversation more moving forward.
Is there a way for people to follow you? Are you tweeting?
I'm all over social media. I have a Twitter. I've got an Instagram, Facebook, everything. I got a website, santangelo racing@gmail.com. So I'm easily accessible. I'm on my Twitter and Instagram often, but shoot me a follow and join in on the fun.
No, and there it is. I just found you. And right now, your description, you're calling yourself a young thoroughbred trainer. At what point does the young get dropped? Is there a cutoff?
I'm only 26. Again, I'll keep riding that young train right now. I'm still young. I'm still learning every day. I'm still young.
Well, you absolutely hung it out there. I mean, you started when you were, what, 22, 23, basically?
Yep, about 23 years old. Yeah, about three and a half, 4 years ago, correct.
Amazing. Well, and obviously this is a pretty nice milestone, and Arlington a great place to get the first graded stake win, and it clearly more in the offing. Brett Santangelo, everybody, and you can follow him. It's just Brett Santangelo, no punctuation, no spaces. Brett with two T's as opposed to Brett Calhoun with one T, and Brett's not on social media anyway, so here's the Brett for you. Brett Santangelo, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Steve. It was awesome talking to you, and I really appreciate your time.
My pleasure. How great is this? 7-year-old gelding, claim for 40, and graded stake win in the Hanshin Cup. And, you know, it's funny, you mentioned that nonetheless. Cipriano Contreras, who won that race last year, Contreras won the Hanshin. He had that Matru a year ago. And he's got to get him back on, too. I owed him a call from late in the winter, actually, and we got busy with Triple Crown preps. A little past the top of hour three, the morning is rolled by, and we'll take a break here, Joanne, and let's come back. We've got Jeremy Plonk, and I thought Dr. Alday was going to join us for a little horse health today, brought to you by Luberson and Reborn, but I'm surprised I have not heard back from him. There was a very interesting piece today in TDN regarding that topic that we brought up with the sales, which was the video repository concept for the endoscopy, for the checking of the throat. And there's been quite a bit written about it since that topic started to come up. And I wanted Dr. Alday to discuss it, as well as giving a bit of a primer again. This is something we haven't done in a while. For those that saw the Country House, I mentioned this yesterday, Country House at Root and Riddle, and getting a thorough checkup, stem to stern, and getting him seeing what might possibly have contributed to what looked like a viral to Bill Mott, looked like a viral issue. I wanted Dr. Alday to give you kind of the checklist, and we haven't done this in years, actually, where Steve explains what diagnostic tests go in to trying to figure out what is at the root of potential problem. And it's a big animal. There's a lot of working parts internally and externally. So let's take a break here, though, and we'll come back. We got about 45 minutes on this Tuesday at Pimlico, and things will start to get very serious tomorrow. And we got draw late in the afternoon downtown, and we'll have a lot more horses tomorrow morning on the grounds. I also hope to connect with John Nichols. I wanted John to give us his view of everybody that had been at Churchill's, seven horses of this Preakness field to 12 that we're preparing. And I wanted John to give you a hint, especially the ones that weren't under the microscope leading into Derby. Let's take a break here, live at Old Hilltop, back after this.
DRF Sports Form Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Form delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and Kent DeSarmo on Afternoon Delights, absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky, or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time is saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, the roof is leaking and the rain's falling on my head. It won't stop. The roof is leaking and the rain's falling on my head. I need a mop. I cry so hard, teardrops on my. She packed up her bags and she moved out on a midnight train. Got no brain. She packed up her bags and she moved out on a midnight train. The girl's insane. She took my heart. Tears rolling down my drain. Just like rain.
We're back at the races.
My buddy come to see me to give me a
little
tip,
Dion.
Tip. I said, now listen here.
Can never go wrong. As we wander through, see what I did there? Wander through, huh? Jeremy Block joining us.
my daughter plays a mean version of Wanderer on the ukulele, so I'm very familiar
really?
With the song. Yeah, she's getting good. She can actually play it behind her head using a clothes hanger. She's kind of becoming like a rock star.
Well, is there a video of this?
We need that. Actually, I need some cheap hits for the Horse Player Now on Twitter account. So maybe I'll put her to work. We were joking the other day that we need to teach our parents some horse racing terms. Maybe we can get some extra viewers that way, too. So, hey, it's the era we live in, right?
That's pretty. How old is she?
She's 13 now. So she picked it up at Christmas. And then within, like, 6 months, she's become the Mozart of the ukulele. So she's having a lot of fun with it. She plays the viola in school, but this is a lot more fun.
That's tremendous. I want to see that. I absolutely demand that you videotape this and YouTube it. That's
great. We'll do our best.
Well, we're going to have to do our best making, if ever updates were going to be necessary to one of our wagering guides, Jeremy, it's going to be starting tomorrow with the draw. And this field of 12, I know people are carrying on that, you know, it's not the Preakness that they were hoping for, but it's the Preakness that we got, and it's fine right by me. It's 12 nice horses.
Well, look, hey, we want to say that it's all about the horses. We want to say that the stars matter. But you know what? Mother Nature's going to have a bigger say on the success or failure of any major event in an outdoor sport like this. Great weather in the forecast could be a record kind of day, you know, pushing, what, 140, 140, low 140s with lousy weather the last couple of years attendance-wise. We'll see what the shift in the grandstand does to the attendance numbers. But I expect handle numbers to be massive. The one thing about early entries for that Friday card at Pimlico you got to watch out for would be the declarations and scratches as we get closer, because there's so many places within like a 2-3 hour van ride to Pimlico. You can enter, take a look at the field, and then decide whether you're going to come in or not. So if you're doing advanced handicapping for Friday, you certainly want to keep an open mind there. But the way the things look right now, tremendous field sizes for Friday. I would anticipate that Sal and his group will get a great card put together for Saturday. And I'm looking forward to it from a wagering standpoint, without a doubt. And as one door closes, another opens. You know, I mean, in racing, we always think we want to see what we're there to see, but sometimes we end up with something else, you know. When everybody wanted to see Holy Bull, we ended up turning the baton over to Cigar and ran off a streak like we've never seen since at that kind of level. So, you know, you don't know what you're going to get in this game. I mean, that's kind of why we tune in, why we show up and see what's going to happen. You know, through the tragedy of Barbaro, we got Bernardini. We don't always get what we showed up for, and sometimes we get something completely different, but still good.
Yeah, agreed. And from a wagering standpoint, I think people are gonna line up to beat, you know, the two favorites. Got to feel like Improbable is going to be the slight favorite over War of Will, but there won't be a lot separating them. You know, the other two, Win-Win-Win and Bodhi Express, will have, you know, some appeal, I think, at the very least, from an exotic standpoint. It's the other eight that are jumping in here that are going to be the focus. And one thing that became obvious over the weekend, and I discussed it with Johnny yesterday, I don't know if you had a chance to listen, but the, you know, the addition of authentic pace pressure, going to make it harder on Always Mining. And they, you know, that's the central focus. This does open up this race to the horses that are going to be trying to rally.
It does. Bodhi Express, you know, deciding to come to the race. He's been pressing Maximum Security in the last couple, you know. Market King is going to go for Lucas. You can almost be sure of that. Warrior's Charge isn't a rabbit, per se. But with Owen Dale also in there, I know it's separate ownership in different groups, but when you've got one speed and one closer, you tend to keep them opposite of each other. So I would expect Warrior's Charge for Brad Cox to go towards the front. So there's four potential speed horses. We know another Twist of Fate is fast. He could certainly be up there as well. And then War of Will, where is he going to be put into the race? I mean, you kind of, if you put those other four or five in the front group, then Improbable, and if War of Will sits a little bit, then they're kind of, you know, right in there. But if you kind of break this field down, you kind of got five to the front, five to the back, and Improbable somewhere in the middle. The favorite could really trip out here, you know, and that's what you've got to defend against if you're trying to find a price. But it's going to, you know, the trip should be good for Improbable. Interesting that Bob Baffert went to the half-mile work in between races. You don't see that much anymore between horses, between the Derby and the Preakness, still getting a work in between. Bob's been a little unconventional with all of his horses this spring. You know, he was moving in terms of like moving horses around and work. He did a lot of different things with Game Winner as the season went on. Certainly with Roadster, that 6 furlong gate work after the Santa Anita Derby was unique. And I went back and tried to call up the PPs of the Baffert horses who have run well in the Preakness. You don't find many works between the Derby and the Preakness with his horses. So, again, these are like little changes, subtleties, and you wonder what they all add up and mean. You know, War of Will had that minor issue with the shoe shift, and Mark Cassie said the foot was a little ouchy the first day back, so they gave him an extra day. So do you want to take a short price on that? Well, the horse has already had some blips in his training throughout the course of the spring. It's an interesting Preakness. There's a lot of different ways you can go. But look, this race does not lend itself to big bombs historically, Steve. We just don't see huge long shots here. Cloud Computing, one of the few exceptions. But, you know, horses 20 to 1 or more have won twice in the Paramutual era. You just don't get huge bombs here. And I don't have the number right in front of me. But, I mean, the number of exactas in a row with a horse 5 to 2 or less involved is 7, 8, 9, something like that, going right now in a streak. So you got to figure the favorite's going to be in there somewhere. Improbable's going to get the trip. I don't know, though. I mean, I think he'll be the favorite, like you said, but in close proximity has to be War of Will. And this is going to be like one of those fun experiments in handicapping, because are we doing trip notes or are we doing connections betting? You know, and that's two of the things that really sway the tote board a lot. When there's an obvious trouble horse, everybody's on them next time, right? That's War of Will. When there's obvious connections, Bob Baffert and Mike Smith, everybody's usually on them. Which will win the day? I kind of think in the win pool that Improbable and the connections will win the day. Bob Baffert's won this race 7 times. Same guys won it last year. There's a lot of cases and checks to make in the box of Improbable in terms of being the post-time favorite. War of Will, what he's got going for him is the fact that everybody on earth saw what happened at the 516th pole, and a lot of people are going to say that cost him the race. We'll see.
You know, and I'm just looking at the original selections that the team came up with: Bob Neumeier and Millie Ball, Jeff Siegel, John White, Dick Girardi, and myself. And of course, Johnny will write up his analysis on Thursday, and Eddie Olchik as well. And is Brett going to get something from Brett again?
Yeah, we'll have Brett Musburger involved as well. So a lot of big names firing in at this Preakness.
Nice. And I'm just, you know, Johnny will lay out, you know, the top line here so far in terms of you know, the major competitors. But interestingly, you had Numi and Millie and Jeff all went improbable on top. Girardi and John White, War of Will. I reached for Always Mining with the expectation at the time last Wednesday that, you know, basically Centeno was going to have the, you know, the controlling speed. And, you know, I'm going to be very intrigued by the draw for him because there's no – so far in his career anyway, he's gotten the lead, but he's fast. And
they took back in the Tessio, though, which I thought was interesting because they
didn't need to. That's true.
Yeah. I mean, you know, they gave Linda Rice's horse a 2-3-4 length edge and went on. I mean, when you're 5 cents on the dollar, I guess you have a little bit of liberty to play around and experiment. But, you know, some horses haven't reacted so well to that experiment, as we've seen Hidden Scroll and others. Along this trail, you know, when you take a good horse out of their game, some people argue that they don't run. He ran, and he came home in the Tessio in a little over 37 seconds the last three furlongs, which was exceptional. So maybe he can sit, but I certainly liked his chances more without the other speed in here. I mean, I can't disagree with that. I mean, if you liked him as a 5-star play before, and I was really bullish on him, you know, he's a 4 or a 3 now with the pace. I mean, you may still like him, but he might not be the 100-unit play anymore. He might be more of a 40.
Now, we're gonna see where, you know, everybody lines up. You know, one of the to me that'll give me an idea of how things might unfold in terms of pace pressure. I mean, I think the further inside that Always Mining draws, the bigger a problem it's going to be. I think they would want to be, you know, I don't know if they want to be in the 12 hole, but I think they, you know, would very much like to be outside, you know, the other potential speed. So it gives Centeno the option and you know, to set up shop. That's the key with him. If he draws inside, he's got to go.
Yeah, and if it clouds your judgment on the front end, think, you know, look, let's go deeper here. Exactus, Tri, Supers, that sort of thing. Deep closers have had a really strong impact in the exotics in the Preakness. I'm not just talking horses from near the back of the pack. I'm talking dead last. I mean, dead last horses have rallied into the ticket more often than not in the last 6-7 years. So you want a horse who is just lagging back and is going to come pick off runners for that second, third spot. And really give a consideration, too. So this additional speed in here, while it might cloud how you think the front may finish, I think it underscores even more. I think you want to look at a Bourbon War, an Owendale, one of those kind of horses, as your second or third horse under the wire to key your exotics. And both of those runners are obviously going to be in the double digits. And you know, we've seen great success from the Florida Derby this year. I mean, the Florida Derby came back, and horses out of that ran essentially, 1-4 in the Kentucky Derby, and with the disqualification, you know, third for Code of Honor. Then you also had the Lexington has been a very good race for
Yes. Decent
horses towards the Preakness in recent years. You got Owendale coming off the victory in there. So you have two horses coming out of a historically good and a seasonally good race with the right running style to be that price horse underneath. So Bourbon War and Owendale, I think, are the two horses you definitely want to consider second or third in your exactas and tries. Now you make your decision what you want to do up near the front. The favorites tend to run well in the Preakness. If they win 50% over the course of 144 years. And like we said, a horse 5-2 or more is almost a short of the exacta in recent times. So you take one of the favorites in the mix, you take those long shots, and you try to build your tickets around that. I think that's probably, you know, the safest approach. And if you still like Always Mining, you like Always Mining over the favorite, over those two big closers, and you're only looking at two combinations, right? You're looking at a 1-by-1-by-2 trifecta ticket, and you try to get, you know, 5-6-1 over 5-2, and try to get one of those 15-20-1 shots third, and you might be looking at a $300 trifecta, hit it a bunch of times because you're only playing two combinations, and you could come out of here with what looks to be, you know, a fairly formful Preakness, and you're walking out with $2,000-$3,000 in your pocket for a little investment.
To the Keeneland point, because you brought it up, and I was staring right at it. You didn't have a Keeneland last out runner in Justify's race last year. However, the three previous runnings, Cloud Computing's Win, Exaggerators, and American Pharoah, you had Lexington and Bluegrass horses at enormous prices. You go back to Cloud Computing, and Senior Investment ended up third at 32-1. So
yeah, that was my key horse that year.
There you go.
Senior Investment. I didn't like Cloud Computing. I mean, so it didn't do me any good. But the same thing, you know, that same sort of thought process. And look, you say, were these coincidences? And something's only happened 3 years. So why are you getting excited about this or that? Mm-hmm. Remember, the calendar has changed a lot in the last 10 years, right? The prep calendar, and horses are taking more time up to the Derby. Those preps right up against that Keeneland, not only the Bluegrass, but then the Lexington's even closer to the Derby. They don't become Derby races anymore. When horses need 5, 6, 7 weeks in between all their starts, it starts to make sense that a race like the Lexington becomes a really key race for the Preakness because of the spacing and what we see on the calendar. So, you know, you have to look at these things, you know, in context of what do they really mean? Are they just a couple coincidences? But when horses are 30-1 running second and third and big prices, you know, these aren't like they were big boppers coming in there. And, you know, it's not Linkage, you know, who's 1-2 in the Preakness coming out of the Bluegrass because the Derby winner wasn't back that year and because, you know, he missed the Kentucky Derby. You know, these are horses that spacing is the reason why they're going from Keeneland to Pimlico. They didn't make the Derby on points per se, maybe a signal man, something like that. It fits, right? The calendar fits, and this is what it's all about. Spacing is so important in today's racing.
In addition to Senior Investment, 32-1, and that was the, you know, the reverse tri-key concept, if you liked Cloud Computing and Classic Empire, $2,194. That was the $2 try. So you're looking at essentially an $1,100 try for a dollar, the $5.50 for 50 cents. In 2016, when Exaggerator wins, Cherry Wine out of the Bluegrass at 17-1, and the Exacta paid $88.40 for $2. The Tri paid $146 for $2, but that's because Nyquist was third. And then you go to 2015, and this was the one that, in retrospect, you say to yourself, why would I not have thought of this? American Pharoah, who wins by 7, and actually paid, somehow paid $380, by the way, in the Preakness. Which,
well, remember, he was all out in the Kentucky Derby. People like Dortmund and Firing Line out of that race. Remember how hard those horses went at each other. So
true.
You know, I mean, we talk about American Pharoah being a tap-in putt in the Belmont, but that was a really contentious Preakness going into it. Those three horses all ran damn good races in Louisville. We're all back.
Well, it was contentious up to the top of the stretch, and then American Pharoah opened up half a dozen,
yeah.
and it was over. What's amazing
paper is what I mean.
What's amazing about this? Dortmund ended up fourth, and of course, Firing Line had about the most miserable day a horse will ever have. I will never forget. We were in the infield, and I just will never forget Firing Line with his chin tucked into his chest, with the rain pelting him. He looked so uncomfortable and unhappy, it went from bad to worse out of the gate. Firing Line was 3-1. Dortmund was 9-2. Tale of Verve was second out of the Lexington. And Divining Rod.
No, Tale of Verve came out of a Keeneland maiden race.
Oh, out of the maiden? That's right. You're right. Absolutely right.
He broke his maiden at a mile
That's right.
for Dallas during the Keeneland.
That's
meet,
right.
And he said, let's take a shot.
And so it was Divining Rod that
came out of the Lexington, right?
The Lexington. Divining Rod was 12-1. Tale of Verve was 28-1. This was an 8-horse field. You could have gone all by all underneath. All by all. And it's unbelievable. It paid essentially paid $1,000. $985 for a $2 try. It's astounding, actually, that for $42 you get back almost $500.
And that's where people have to, you know, look at a race and say, you know, what can I expect? What are my reasonable expectations going into a race? If the favorite wins, I have to get somebody else out, right? I mean, like, if you like Improbable in this race, you can't do a lot with War of Will. You know what I mean? Unless you're just going to concede the race to, you know, $24 exacta and a $112 try, even if you get a little bit of a price in third. You know, you've got to get creative in the unders if you like one of the favorites. And if you like a horse at a little bit of a price, then you don't have to get as creative. You know, you get 5 or 6 to 1 on top, then you can use that favorite. You know, you don't have to pitch the favorite if you get 5 or 6 to 1 on top. But if you like the favorite to win, it's hard to take that clear-cut second choice. And in this race, I think the betting will be pretty clear-cut with Improbable and War of Will. So I don't think you can use both and attack the trifecta. Maybe the super, but if you're going to bet tries, which is more in my wheelhouse, I don't think you can use both. You got to pick the one you like the best out of those two and go get it with some of those pricey closers. And again, Keeneland has been the place to look, and you say, why? And I think it's because of the timing. I think it makes perfect sense, and those horses will be worth a look again.
Well, and on this topic, if you're a War of Will fan and you imagine this race to be similar to the 12-horse field that we saw in 2010, where Looking at Lucky goes off at 5-2 and Super Saver went off at just under 2-1 and basically at 9-5. That exactly. First Dude, second, and also Jackson Bend, who I always liked. And you want a twist, who I actually, if I'm not mistaken, I kind of gave a exotic push to in written form. You want a twist. The nice Dutro, who felt like a useful try or super horse. He was fourth with Edgar. But with a 5-2 second choice, Looking at Lucky, a horse that everybody knew, you know, was going to get a real chance in this race after having the disastrous situation at Derby. The $2 try paid $2,771. Mm-hmm. The super paid $17,000. Unbelievable. So it's out there.
Steve, you talked about the visual handicapping with Firing Line. I remember we were doing the live chats, the Express Bet race chats back in those days in 2010, and we were doing it live on track that day. And I remember First Dude and Jackson Ben just looking absolutely impeccable before the race, like the two absolute standout horses before the race, and they both ran to their looks. It doesn't always work that way, but the Preakness is a unique event, you know, from the Derby in that it's a road game for everybody, right? Even the Maryland horses, they're faced at Fair Hill, and they're coming down. They're not used to hanging out in that stakes barn, making the walk on the front side. A lot of people, a lot of hubbub to the paddock, some saddle inside, but when they get out to that walking ring out in the infield, that's a different look and environment for everybody except the Arkansas horses, which I think even with the conditions, sometimes we don't get the saddling in the infield of the Arkansas Derby, but that's like the only dress rehearsal horses really get for that environment. And that's another reason I like the Arkansas horses a lot of times in the Preakness to run well, because they've had that experience saddling in an infield like that. It's a whole new experience compared to even the Derby, where a lot of those horses were at Churchill in the fall or part of the year. You know, it's kind of they've been there all week training. These horses don't stay at like 2-3 weeks like they do in Louisville before the Derby. They kind of come to Pimlico Tuesday or Wednesday. They don't know what's going on. I think the Preakness is a really good visual handicapping race for horses who are handling it and not handling it. And I think it's something you should keep an eye on. If it's not your forte, you know, follow somebody on Twitter who has a good eye and see what they may be tweeting, you know, before the race on who looks good and who doesn't. Listen to the TV simulcast crew on track. You usually don't get a lot of that from the NBC broadcast. So again, if you're into the visual side of things, watch the simulcast feed from Pimlico. Follow people on Twitter who are normally tweeting about things like that. But I think it's a great visual handicapping exercise because it's so much different than what most of these horses have done before. And some of them are running back on 2 weeks rest. How do they look? You know, we really haven't seen them much. We don't get a lot of workout footage and things like we do going into the Derby. So how do these horses look coming out of the Kentucky Derby? I remember Super Saver looked, you know, horrible, right? I mean, Donna Brothers pointed it out on the NBC broadcast and coming into the week when Super Saver came off the van at Churchill that same year in 2010. He looked terrible, right? And so he runs up the track Looking at Lucky, rebounds. A couple horses who look good in the environment round out a big trifecta. Could be an approach you want to take in a race like this. 8 new shooters, how well do you know the new horses compared to all those Derby holdovers and things like that? Maybe the eyeballs can help you.
Jeremy Blanc, everybody. And, of course, you can also get help at horseplayernow.com from the Buzz Report. And we will all be working tomorrow, Thursday, and Friday to make whatever amendments we need to with this field of 12 for the Preakness and the Express Bet Preakness Stake Wagering Guide. Jeremy, best of luck. We'll be recapping it next week.
All right. Look forward to seeing you on Thursday.
You got it. Jeremy Plonk, everybody, Horse Player Now. We're going to stay right here. We got 15 minutes to fill out on what's been a fun Tuesday here at Pimlico. And every day of the week, particularly race day Saturdays and Sundays on the jump circuit, have been fun for Jack Fisher, who is simply out of control. And Jack, every weekend, I can't wait till we can bet more often on the jump slots, because I would just go straight to your horses and just bet them. Congratulations on the Iroquois Scorpion Dancer.
Well, thank you. I'm lucky I have a lot of nice horses.
You're killing it. I mean, we talked to Gallo last week, and we also talked to Sean Clancy, and Sean was not excited about the prospect of facing off against you in the Iroquois on Saturday. But, you know, there's a lot of satisfaction, I imagine, 10-year-old Scorpiancer, for him to come back at this age and win an Iroquois. It's awfully nice.
I said if there was a horse that I had four in the race, if there was a horse about to win it, that's the one I wanted. Because he didn't run well the time before. He's coming back from an injury. We gave him like a year and a half off. And, you know, very satisfying to have him come back and run really well.
No doubt. And I was certainly rooting for him myself and was tickled to, you know, to see the win. Explain what you do. And I know it's a little different than, you know, than flat racing. But when you've got a horse that's going to need time off, do we just basically turn them out and then just check on them every few months?
Basically, that's it. I turn them out 24/7. They don't come in. You know, a lot of vets advise to turn them out for a little bit in a small paddock, but I find when you do that, they run around, they buck, and they feel good, and they hurt themselves. So if you just leave them out, pull the shoes off, and he's out in a herd of like a dozen of them.
Most
of those are retired, not broke.
Exactly. With him, you know, he basically was away since the Iroquois in 2017. So, I mean, it was virtually, he did run in the Temple Gwathmey last week, but he left the course. And I suppose you were just running, in the Gwathmey just, you know, basically as a tightener for Saturday.
Yeah, but I do that a lot. I mean, even Scorpiancer before, like at Belmont or the Gloucester, the time before that, that I'm running him as a prep, and he ends up winning it. For him to run that poorly was very disappointing. I didn't, you know, if he was second or third, that'd be fine. But for him to pull up was not good.
What did McDermott have to say? I mean, what was your thoughts immediately?
The only comment out of McDermott was he should have been on Moscato, who's another horse I trained that won the Quad.
So that's what he
I can get a whole lot out of that one.
That's great, actually. Well, it just tells you, it goes to show that even, you know, the jump jocks, they want to win too. They're not.
Yeah.
Well, he couldn't have been unhappy though. He couldn't have been unhappy about Saturday.
No. He had a great day. He won on a horse of Sean's too, the novice stake. So he had a great day.
Yeah, absolutely, and that we should fold that in, you know, for you as well, because you are one of the people that Sean, you know, Sean's got a few different trainers for the River D team, but that's a nice win in the Frost.
Yeah, no, that's $100,000 purse there, so that helps pay some bills.
Yeah, to stay with Scorpiancer for a minute, and you know, you look at his previous win had come in the Iroquois back in 17. And what exactly went wrong? What was the injury that sidelined him?
Well, he had a bow, but he was actually getting ready for Far Hills, and the tendon I didn't like. I had him ultrasounded. The vet said it wasn't that bad. And so he gave him a little bit of time and then came back in the spring. And he said it doesn't look good now. And then again last fall, I had him. He was working. He was ready to run. And the vet, we scanned him before we were going to run him, and he said, well, it doesn't look that good. So this year I decided not to scan him and just run him.
How about that? And, you know, this is a 3 mile race, Jack. I mean, it's a demanding. He's a fascinating jumper, too, because he's competitive on the flat tracks when we come to Saratoga and Belmont. And he's been terrific over the hunt meets.
Yeah, well, he's kind of a cool horse, too, because in England they paid a lot of money for him, but he was a disaster over there. And it was a question of whether just to give him away over there or pay to ship him over here. Glad they paid to ship him over here.
How about that? And how old was he at that point?
He was probably a four-year-old. He's a scorpion, and the scorpions, I say, are a little bit nuts. He's a little bit nuts.
And out of a silver patriarch mare, and, you know, here he is at 10, you know, and it's got to excite you because knowing what's ahead with Saratoga, you know, he Smithwick
him,
and Turf Riders.
I will skip Saratoga with him simply because he has an old injury, and the flat track may bring that out more.
Oh,
and,
interesting.
You know, again, we want the $450,000 at Far Hills.
So you'll wait. You'll wait now for all the way till the Grand National.
Well, now I'll run him at Belmont.
Okay, Lonesome
he'll
Glory.
Run at Belmont, but he will not run at Saratoga.
So you'll use the Lonesome Glory as a chance.
I just find again my horses do better if they're coming back from an injury to run a couple and then give them some time and then run a couple and give them some time.
Well, so and you and the ownership group, you got plenty of others you got a loaded wagon to come to the flat track.
Exactly. So I don't really need it. So
well, with that schedule though, you put the Iroquois in your back pocket, and if you can win one or the other, the Lonesome Glory or certainly the Grand National, he's got every chance to be a champion.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the other thing they love that 2 years ago when he was Eclipse of Horse. They want the Eclipse Award.
Well, and it looks like you got a plan that you're gonna stick to. Let's also touch, Jack, on all the other success, because Gallo said you basically have wrapped up the training title.
That might be correct. I mean, you know, for me, though, I have a loaded barn. I'm lucky that I have the owners that will go out and spend the money to buy, you know, decent prospects. And the others don't have that opportunity. And so, I mean, I was looking at you know, I had like three in a maiden race, and I'm looking, all mine are like $75,000 horses. Everybody else is like 15. Who's going to win?
Yeah.
So I'm lucky to have the owners that will put up that sort of cash, and we can go buy nice horses.
Jack, it occurs to me to ask because, you know, here we are in the middle of the Triple Crown season, and we've got, I can't say that we're not getting plenty of publicity as an industry. As an observer, good or bad, you know, they say, oh, any publicity is good publicity.
That's what they say.
It does feel though in the time that, you know, we've talked about jump racing on the show, that it's more popular than ever, and you know, whether, you know, some of it is specific to venues, you know, like an Iroquois and like what Guy Torsiglieri's doing at Far Hills, but it you know, I do see the occasional new owner. You've got some crossover, somebody like a Gary Barber who's bringing his friends in. What's your thoughts about, you know, about Steeplechase and where you go from here?
Well, I had an owner, Dr. Gessler. He had a horse at Peaks that ran in the Derby, and he came to, you know, next year he came to the Iroquois. He said that's the most fun he's ever had at a race meet, and he kept coming back even if he didn't have a horse running. So, you know, I think steeplechasing is just different. You know, it's nice. I mean, Iroquois puts on a great show. And my father was down there. He used to train flat horses, and he said it's the most beautiful turf course he's ever seen. I mean, the turf is unbelievable there.
Yeah. You're gonna have the opportunity to showcase again. You mentioned Colonial and, you know, the the various stops,
Monmouth,
Saratoga.
Monmouth coming up, and, and Monmouth has a beautiful turf course. Colonial Downs has a beautiful turf course. Obviously, Saratoga is beautiful. You know, it's nice, Colonial Downs, and it looks like they have, you know, I'm not just thinking of Colonial for jumpers. I'm also thinking for flat horse. I see the purses down there. It's pretty significant.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that that's thanks to what the Virginia Equine Alliance has done. And, of course, Virginia is such an important part of the steeplechase calendar, you know, going north and then coming back down south. Speaking of which, how about that maiden winner going back a couple of weeks, that Other Cheek with the really emergent Mike Mitchell, who's really become, you know, kind of the young
Mikey did
star.
A beautiful job with Other Cheek, because Other Cheek to me was kind of a disaster. He was a decent enough flat horse, but over jumps he'd been very disappointed. And Mikey just went out there and just kind of went around and didn't worry about it, and then came flying light. So Mikey does that a lot. It's like you think you're done, and then he sneaks through somewhere.
He certainly at Saratoga he just, you know, kind of opened eyes, and
that's where I noticed him. That's where I noticed him.
There you go. And that horse, when it comes to, you know, certainly Sean Clancy has told a lot of people in conversations we've had, you know, Sean goes to Europe and he scouts, and, you know, he's had this pipeline he's created with Charlie Lopresti. What would you tell prospective owners that are not seeing the success they were hoping for with some of their flat horses about maybe, you know, trying steeplechase and approaching, you know, you
well,
and,
so
and
I,
other
you know,
players.
I have another horse, Ison. Now, Ison, he's a tappet. You know, he's like $450,000 a yearling, and he was a disaster on the plot. And as a jumper, he's made $350,000. You know, he's good there. So I always say that, you know, to the owners that I have that also have flat horses, once you have them to a stage, I like to see him break their mate, at least be close. He didn't, but he had the breeding behind him. But, you know, when they get to that level, wherever it is, there's always a level unless they're going to be a great horse. You know, you're talking about that Other Cheek is owned by Woods Lane Farm, the Wolcotts. They own Saddler's Joy. And they have another one, Lunaire I tried to get because I thought he had reached the level where they were going to have to put him in for a price. That's where he belonged, like for $50,000. And, so I think, you know, when they reach that level, you got to put them in for a price. Give it a shot. I mean, there's significant enough money, and they get their maiden back.
How, when people are looking, when flat owners are looking at their horse, what is it? And I suppose they could call, you know, you and Ricky Hendricks and Jack, you know, anybody, Jonathan, etc., Leslie Young, and you know, say I've got so and so, and would he be a jump prospect? What makes a good jump prospect from the flat side of things?
Well, number one is not having problems to begin with. You know, don't have the horse that has, you know, terrible problems that he's not going to hold up. That would be number one. Number two is just, you know, a nice athletic type of horse. I always hate it when I go look for a jumper and the guy brings out an 18-hand horse. And he trips coming out of the stall. He's not an athlete. He's a big horse. That's it. You know, I'm happy with the 16. You know, I say like 15-2. I'll take a 15. Back, you know, and hold up.
Interesting. I think it was Jonathan years ago when I asked him similar. I said, "What do you do to check?" And he says, I watch them go, and we might put them over a very low. Just watch their action, and I can. He said I can generally tell if they're gonna take to this or not.
Yeah, and the other good thing, you know, I remember years ago I had a horse named Chocolate Moose, and Chocolate Moose was like 8 when they decided to send him to be a jumper, and he didn't want to do it. We ran him like once or twice. He did, you know, he might have been third, but he didn't want to do it. I sent him back. I think Charlie Hadry trained him, and I sent him back to Charlie. And it gave Charlie the opportunity to drop him in because he'd been away for 6 months. And he galloped in his next start. You know, it just freshened him up.
You might have taught him a lesson, and he realized. I like it better.
Yeah, exactly. This might come to you. If you don't get your act together, this is your next fight.
this is your future. We're going to make you go over these fences. Speaking of fences, what about Lemony Bay in the Radnor in the timber race on Saturday?
We're taking a shot. I think that's a pretty good race. I mean, Gold Cup, and the other horse who was third in the Gold Cup, and Lemony Bay, you know, he's a 10-year-old, even though Scorpionthor is 10. But, I think we're taking it. He was second in the Gold Cup a couple of years ago, but I think we're taking a shot.
Got to ask, too, for Mr. Hot Stuff fans, where's he
Mr.
set up?
Mr. Hot Stuff was given to a girl that gallops for me, Quinn Scala, and Quinn is going to try to do the Thoroughbred makeover with him.
Oh, nice. So a third career for Mr. Hot Stuff.
Exactly. It's cool to keep doing. Yeah, I think horses, they don't want to just be turned out in the field.
No.
They want to do something else. So I always try to place them somewhere where they can do something, whether it be fox hunting or showing or whatever.
They always said that he was cut out to be a Grade One winner, but they just didn't know it was going to be.
He liked the way he looked too much. He didn't want to have mud in his face. He looked so much good. He seriously does. The horse pose coming across the finish line every time.
Well, including in one of the greatest, most exciting races ever in 2 years ago in the Grand National, that three-horse finish. Yeah. And he wins that photo. Jack, you're killing it. It's always great to talk to you. Continued success.
Okay. Thank you.
I appreciate it. Jack Fisher, everybody, and Jack's just out of control. He's just winning everything. We've taken you to the wire here, and back tomorrow for the Wednesday edition. I want to thank Jack Fisher and Jeremy Plonk and Brett Santangelo, Andy Serling, and Stanley Huff. That's a lot of you. You had a youngster, self-described young thoroughbred trainer, and two absolute KG veterans, Stan Huff and Jack Fisher. Replay tomorrow, 6 to 9. Here on Sirius XM, HRRN today, 3 o'clock. What's today? I'm losing track. It's Tuesday. No, they got some stuff on today. Talk to you tomorrow.